But idea. So a curtain was placed in between. But they could see people coming in and out of the room, and they glimpsed one team, saw the other group kept bringing in cans of paint. And the other team was bringing in polish. And then finally, after 40 days, the curtain was removed. And one kingdom had, its artists had produced this dazzling painting that was iridescent and multi-dimensional, and was just like a window into paradise. And looking at that, everyone doubted that the other team could possibly match it, but they looked over to the other wall, facing that wall. What was there? Something equally beautiful. Exactly as beautiful. In fact, it looked exactly the same. It was the same painting, but it had been made without paint. Metal was polished, polished and polished until it became a pure mirror. And so the same result was achieved in these two very different ways. And so the contest had to be ruled a draw. What does this story mean? It might have many meanings, but one meaning is this. The choices of the artists reflect different principles of the path. One principle, the principle that was put into practice by the painters, could be called Mujahida. Mujahida, that is to say, striving, struggling, producing something, exerting oneself. The other wall represents Mushahida, witnessing.
Work on the path is to
are given a divine name to recite, or the act of fixing a time, putting everything else aside, sitting down, moving your vocal cords, moving your tongue, reciting the name, that's ujjayi, you're exerting yourself, you're projecting something, doing something. But if that's all that you do, the job is only half done. You're just speaking and speaking and speaking, but not listening. And the other half of the practice is attuning, listening, feeling what is unfolding through presence. Without that, one is in danger of what Jesus, peace be upon him, called a vain repetition. On the other hand, suppose you have only ujjayi and no mujjayi, and you don't fix a time for your practice, you don't recite a name, just wherever you are, you feel how you are. Okay, then something good can come with just checking in, sensing your state. But the receiving and practicing of a mantra, a word, a phrase that has come down through the lineage that bears a meaning that is intended to resound in your being and stimulate something, the absence of that active aspect of practice leaves something missing. So, every kind of practice involves some combination of these two elements. Let's speak about what struggling means. What is struggling? We've considered ujjayi in the sense of exerting an intention. Rinzai says, the one who struggles with the self finds nobility. What does that mean, to struggle with the self? peace in this world depends first and foremost on the attainment of peace within ourselves. This is a well-known principle, a commonplace, if you will, at least at the level of intellectual acknowledgement. There is wide understanding that peace will never manifest in the world unless it results from peace within us. And yet, again and again, we witness all kinds of efforts undertaken in the name of peace, but which wreak havoc on the world because precisely of the absence of that inner knowledge that would make real peace impossible. When peace is a symbol of a goal that is pursued without any accountability to the internal unity, peace, luminosity, and compassion and justice of one's own inner being, then all efforts toward some imagined peace are doomed to failure and indeed doomed to proliferate the opposite of peace. So peace must begin with oneself. Does this principle exclude acting for the sake of peace in the world? Does it require us that, having understood this, we'll take no action in the world until such an imagined time as there will be in us an unshakable tranquility? No. Two may indeed proceed in tandem, the work within and the work without. And in fact, the work on peace within cannot really be isolated from the work without either, because our interior is not disconnected from our environment, our community. The very process of attaining peace doesn't occur in a vacuum. It occurs in a changeable environment that is continuously pressing in upon us. And so it is impossible, really, to divide these two spheres of the struggle. Struggle for peace. But herein lies a clue that comes directly out of the sentence we're studying. Struggle, by struggling with the self, one finds peace. Now, study that phrase closely. Listen to that phrase. By struggling with the self, one finds peace. So, how do I find peace in myself by struggling with the self? How do I find peace in the world? Do I find peace in the world by struggling with the other? Never. Peace will never come in the world by struggling in the world with the other. Peace will come in the world, struggling in the world with the self in the world. That is to say, that force that you contend with in the world, if it's the other, your struggle with it will never resolve in peace. But if you struggle in the world with the self, peace will come. What does adversary is the other, the hope of peace is misplaced. But if your adversary is the self, it doesn't mean there won't be struggle. It doesn't mean you won't go forth and stand for peace and sacrifice and strive, enter into the fray. But you do it with the self, which is to say, you are in every other is in you. Then can come peace. Struggle with the self. So, we look out on a world that needs
needful of pure
transformation, redemption. And none of that will go away if relegated to the unconscious. What is unresolved will declare itself in all manner of ways until resolution comes through shaida, clear witnessing, extension of presence to what has been blinkered off, hidden from sight, and mujahida, that is to say, work, restorative action to heal, to renew justice, harmony, quality, opportunity. There's a direct correlation between inner work that we're doing, work upon ourselves and the witnessing of the self, the struggle for peace and the struggle for peace in the world. And these two can never be mutually divided. And there will be no peace in one when there isn't peace in the other. And yet both are always works in progress. Never finished, always needed to be renewed, generation after generation. But the gains that we make in this way can be passed on, because there is a legacy of wisdom, of kindness that is transmitted from heart to heart down the ages. If it wasn't for this world would have crumbled to pieces a long time ago. There is this redemptive movement of being. And when we come together like this, it is for the sake of serving that energetic channel to give our lives over to it. And of course that intention of service means that we enter into it with a high aspiration, but we must be mindful that all along the way we will have our limitations in vision. We won't always see all that is to be seen. But if the heart is sincere and humble, then it will be ready to be shown. It will meet what is to be revealed with a readiness to bear witness. So, by no means do we enter this work with the complacent self-righteousness of the assumption that the solution to all problems is ours to give. But we enter instead desire to awaken, to listen, to be of service, to render friendship, see the self in the other, to stand for the dispossessed, even at personal cost. And that stance is not always a silent one. Maybe a vocal one, it may be a resounding one. It may mean entering right into the fray, even as a combatant, as Nuru did, as my father did. But the principle that distinguishes not for the sake of oneself separately constituted, nor even for the sake of one's separate religion, or race, or nation. Action that is taken is for the peace of us all, witnessing self in every other, and seeking always the fulfillment of the welfare of that great self, which is the self of all selves, and which is like a body which has its different parts, its different limbs and organs and tissues and cells. Now, when a body loses its unity, then comes disease. There must be harmony, mutuality, mutual service in all the parts of the body. That's what the struggle is for. Struggle isn't for the sake of the hand or the foot, the eye or the tooth. Struggle. We're called to a struggle, and we must be called, if we're born on this earth to serve, and that struggle must be for the whole body. And if any part of that body is neglected and subordinated, then better to abandon the struggle altogether and be quiet and be silent than to assert just the rights of this part or another. If we're going to stand up, it's got to be for the whole. But when some part of the whole in particular is hurting and is wounded, their attention is needed, their help is needed, their the voice of solidarity can and must be lifted up. This is true today, right now, when we look across this country, we see that we have not yet that perfect union that we seek. We have work to do to ensure that all people are held sacred. No one's life is deemed less precious than anyone else's, that opportunities are equal for all. And that means healing and transforming decades, centuries of inherited inequalities. Let us undertake that good work. Let's work on ourselves, on this world, for the self of all selves. Struggle. Don't cease struggling. Make sacrifices when sacrifices are called for. But let that struggle be imbued with witnessing the presence, that luminous attention that will make struggle itself success, and without which struggle descends into discord, recrimination, hostility. No. It's that clear light of luminous presence, witnessing the self in every self, in that space, stepping forth, rising up, and working to create a beautiful world right here on Earth, in these bodies, amidst Earth.